I am John Howie, and I'm here with Laura Archers, and we are recording our first episode of the Learning Value Podcast. Laura and I are two special kinds of geeks. We're learning geeks.
Yeah, welcome. We're so glad that you've joined us. Our invitation to you is to embrace the geek inside of you, the learning geek. And we'll share how we reached this level of nerddom in learning and why we're starting this podcast series in the first place. So join us for a brief chat. And while you're listening, reflect on your own learning geek superpowers.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Once you do embrace that learning geek, you can never go back.
Absolutely. Right.
So Laura and I are just going to have a conversation about learning. We've known each other for many years. We've both been working in learning for decades. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to asking these questions.
Me too. Let's get after it.
Here we go with question one. I wonder, Ms. Archers, if you could really tell me about your first real experience with learning where you realized it was what you wanted to be when you grew up.
I love this question. I love it so much. I think back to my time in university, and I went to university. I had a good experience, but not a great experience. And I left after a couple of years and went to college. As part of the college courses, I started, I just had a real affinity for technology. And in that class, while I was learning about technology, which was many years ago, so nowhere close to the significance that we see today in terms of technology, there was still DOS, I'm that old. I started helping the teacher because I caught on quickly. And when I started helping the teacher, I started to realize that I could actually connect concepts with the people that were trying to learn them. And it made an impact on me. And then when I followed on in some of my early career and ended up at a technology company, that's where the passion really exploded, because I fell in love with our customers and I wanted to actually teach them. I wanted to be in front of them. And within my first year of that job, I was just like, how do I get in front of, like, I want to become a teacher. I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to figure it out. And ultimately that's where it all began. And as soon as I was in that classroom teaching, and through all of the years that have passed since, my first and my foremost passion is just being with people in their process of learning and recognizing that moment when they get a concept and they can connect it to something they can apply. It was powerful the very first time in college, and it's just as powerful over more than two decades later.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So that's my story. What about you, John? What got you into learning?
You know, it's actually kind of interesting. I was one of those people who graduated high school and didn't really know what he wanted to be when he went up. And I had a similar university experience to you, it sounds like. I made the dean's list, but I made a special dean's list called the dean's vacation list, which is the list you make after your first year when they say you had way too much fun, go away and grow up for a little while. So I was told you need to leave university and go and try and figure out what you want to do with your life. So I had no idea.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. You see, you're going to learn stuff about me you never heard about before.
I know. This is very new. I'm loving it, though. This is my jam. Go for it.
You know, it's one of those things where I landed a job. I had an aunt who got me a job at a law firm in downtown Calgary, and it was a really big law firm. And I had embraced my inner geek, my learning geek, from an early age. The Apple IIc computer is really what set me on the path to technology competence where we're on today. But I got the job to teach these secretaries, we could call them secretaries back then, that's what they called themselves, how to use an accounting system. I was really good at the accounting system, so I got stuck in a room with a bunch of adult learners, and I'm 19 years old, and I was told, teach them how to use this program. And when I actually got a couple of them to understand what the heck I was talking about, and I could see that little light turn on over their head, but they went, oh, I get it. I know what you're talking about. And then they go ahead and do it. It's same as you. I got a feeling of satisfaction I've never felt before. I saw that little light go on and went, oh, I think I know what I want to be when I grow up. It only took a couple extra years. So I went back to university and got an education degree and taught in regular schools for a while and just kind of fell into corporate learning. But from that point where I saw that little light bulb turn on, that was something I got satisfaction from really for the first time. So that's what I try and bring to everybody in every kind of a learning experience, is that light bulb moment.
Yeah, I so get it. I was kind of getting a little bit teary-eyed over here. I'm like, I could imagine you, right? I was actually picturing you as a 19-year-old going, how am I going to do this? So great. I get curious around learning experiences and impact. And so what I'd love to hear a little bit about is, what's an example of a learning experience that you had a hand in creating that ultimately it made an impact on you somehow?
Okay. There's lots of experiences and there's all kinds of interesting stories that come around. Probably the first one that jumps to mind is I was part of a team that was building one of the first virtual online high schools in Alberta. And this is way back in the year 2000. Back in the year 2000, when you turn on your modem, it still squeaked at you. So that's how old I am. We used ICQ as our main tool of communication with these students. So it's one of those things where that's going way back into the distant past. I had got this job and I was able to talk myself into this job for something that didn't exist before. So nobody really knew what it was going to be like. And I had to teach a grade 9 class a lesson on poetry. And I thought, okay, well, in a regular classroom, if I was going to do a poetry lesson, I'd do this. Then we'd talk about this and I'm typing it. Then we'd have this kind of a conversation. I was typing the whole thing. And by the time I was done, one lesson for grade 9 class was 27 pages of text. And I went, I am never going to read this much. How can somebody who's in grade 9 be expected to read this much content in an online environment? It's not going to work. So even way back 20 years ago in the wild west of online learning, I realized too much text. People don't want to read that much. And even back then, their attention spans might have been a little bit longer. It's so much shorter now. You really need to compress everything. You need to get as much value out of learning in the shortest amount of time possible. And that was something that really made an impact on me. How about yourself?
So they all have an impact on me. I maybe might start there on the impact first and then go back to the projects. Okay. You know, I feel like my process of learning about learning and really embracing the geek within me has been about learning about the process of how things get created in a way that actually make a business impact. Because I spend a lot of my time in the corporate space. And because it's not just about getting the results of the learning, it's also the process by which we got there, right? Who I worked with, how we collaborated, how we partnered, how we dealt with challenges that arose, the decisions that needed to be made. And I feel like the predominant impact is that I kept getting in these projects and in the process of the creation, I was learning more about the person I wanted to be as a partner and as a collaborator in creating great learning experiences. So that's the piece around, like, I got to be the learner in the process. And I think of so many of them, and one that pops out is a safety program that I did. And like, it was powerful to be part of this team. There was a great project manager. There was a fantastic support from communications. The leaders were on board. They were visible, vocal in the process with me. And they recognized that the learning itself would not change the behavior. And so they were really putting themselves in the position of being true sponsors and true supporters and providing the appropriate prompts and motivation to help people be successful in adopting and applying the learning. And what made it all work was the way that we worked together in order to get to those conclusions. And this wasn't like a short process. This was over the course of 18 months. But they were so committed to safety and they were so much the voice of this work that really I was just creating, you know, the tools, the resources and experiences that helped to position it all. Right? So for me, I love that experience. I loved everything about it. And everyone I worked with, I still think of them and like, I smile because it was such a positive experience for me. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when you're on a learning project like this and you go through that experience and you actually make an impact and you make a real change, the people who you did that with, you do have a weird bond with them. It's like, we went through hell together when we built that workspace hazardous materials training 7 years ago. I'm going to know you forever because of all the trouble that we had to get over together.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent. You form bonds, like yes. meaningful bonds. Yeah,
that's right. And that's why you and I have known each other for a bunch of years. I don't even know how many it's been, but we still kept in touch. Now we get to do this kind of stuff for fun.
It's been well over a decade, my friend. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. I try not to do the math anymore. Although I can feel every year.
Oh, you and me both. I feel good.
All right. Hey, I want to talk about learning styles now. You know, we all supposedly have a preferred way to learn, and usually our styles are grouped according to our senses. There's the visual learner, and there's the auditory learner, and there's the kinesthetic learner. And you know what? Those are the three that I was taught about in university. And now I just read up before this and there's like three more, and then there's a whole bunch. And say there's five, there's six, there's seven. People are pushing for an eighth learning style. You know, thinking about learning styles, do you pay attention to them when you're building learning? How much weight do you give people's learning style when you're building this type of training, any type of training?
So that's a really big question. I think I'll kind of take it from two different directions. So learning styles, I was taught the same thing, visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. And I would offer that having been at the front of the room in a physical classroom and spent somewhere in the neighborhood of like 5,000 hours at the front of the room, or, you know, online facilitating and teaching, yes, I recognize that there's different learning styles, but ultimately my role as the instructor and facilitator of a conversation is really to pay attention to how my audience is responding and to constantly be in adjustment. So I acknowledge that those learning styles exist. They do have an impact on how I design things. And there's the lived experience if it's a live instruction around how we create that in real time, moment to moment. I would say that I do consider learning styles, but I also consider, and I consider it quite a bit more than learning styles, I would offer introversion and extroversion.
Well, that's interesting. And it does make a difference. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and again, it depends on the context, right? If we're talking about a live environment and I'm facilitating or teaching a room of 20 people, you know, my awareness of visual, auditory, and kinesthetic learners means that if they're introverted as well, they also need to be able to have time to process, to think through in smaller groups or privately, so that they can feel comfortable to share more broadly, that we can kind of pull them into the conversation. Because I think oftentimes introverts, you know, might get skipped over in some of that design pieces. And I think of it as well in the online environment, thinking about introversion and extroversion, because if I've got, you know, and to your point, I think you mentioned it a while ago, if it's a lot of heavy text and it's a page turning, like bore me to tears LMS course, like how much attention do we expect that an extroverted person is going to want to spend with that? Yeah. Exactly none, right? So I think about visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, and I think about introversion and extroversion as ways of being, and try and come up with, after I think about those learning styles, go, what's the most, you know, cost and time efficient? Because again, we're in corporate, and so every time we have a training experience or a learning experience that we want to create, it's time away from the tools, it's time away from business. And so I pay attention to those learning styles to the degree that I can in the constraints of those kind of three buckets of considerations. Does that make sense, or does that leave you with more questions?
Oh no, it absolutely makes sense. And you know, it's one of those things where I agree with you 100%. It's the learning style exist, and we know that they exist. It's actually funny you mentioned introversion and extroversion, because just because you're extroverted doesn't mean that you can't be introverted. Just because you're introverted doesn't mean you can be extroverted. Just because you like to learn through an auditory method doesn't mean you're not going to learn from the visual and the kinesthetic pieces. So it's one of those things where, you know, you kind of pay attention to it, and you don't really want to have just one style of delivery all the time. But other than that, I don't really give it a lot of attention. There are some tasks that don't work well for the tactical piece or for the kinesthetic piece. But for the most part, you can get people to learn through giving them some tactics, giving them activities, giving them homework assignments, giving them real life ways to apply their knowledge, and they will be able to get what they need out of it from that.
Yeah, I would go one step further, that when people want to learn, when they truly want to learn, they will bend their style to lean into alternate ways to learn.
Yes, absolutely. And the only way they're going to turn through that 17-page document is if they have to, if it's compliance learning, which isn't about learning, it's about check marks.
Right. Well, so I'll just share, though, I just signed up for a course with Udemy. Mm-hmm. And the instructor is on video, and he's got a whole bunch of resources. It's very well laid out, like structurally very well laid out. It's been a great experience so far, but it's not my first preference to learn. It's nowhere close. Like, do I want to watch a video, download a resource, and, you know, fill it out by hand? I guarantee you that's not what I want to get up to. Like, I prefer the live environment, live online or live in classroom. I have a preference. But I'm pretty motivated because I really want the outcome of this course. So I'm prepared to try something different and embrace it and find a way to make it interesting for me. Like, I will create ways to make it interesting for me. So I think it's, there also has to be like the right prompts and the right motivations intrinsically and extrinsically to just get people moving down the path of learning because they choose to. And you're right, 100%. I'm with you on the compliance piece. Mm-hmm. Like if it's just a check mark, then people just kind of bend to the will. Oh, I need to do this next policy sign off. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yes.
There Please I don't bore my, me to tears.
I got my check mark. I haven't retained a single thing, but I got my check mark of 100% so I can do the next one.
Yeah. That is a sad state of affairs. I feel like that in and of itself is a whole podcast of how we can like really flip the script on compliance instructions and things that we really actually need them to do and to change in terms of behavior.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, if one of my mantras is if you're not changing people's behavior, then it's communications.
Yep.
If communications, you can just tell them and they know it and it's fine. But if you want them to actually behave differently, then it's learning. Then it's a training activity.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love it. Okay. Do I get to ask you a question now? I feel like it's my turn.
Yeah, it's your turn now. We're so far off script, it doesn't matter anymore. But we'll try to get back on that. It's fine.
So, you know, my previous question was like a looking back kind of question about impact. And this one is more of a looking forward. So when you think about the difference, John, that you want to make in the learning world, how would you describe it?
You know, it kind of... it probably ties into the comment I just made about training being about behavior and communications being about learning. And it's one of those things that I feel like we've kind of gotten away from in the corporate learning environment, because a lot of it is here, we're going to sit and we're going to do this presentation and we're going to talk to you and that's it. Or we're going to talk to you and then we're going to send you an evaluation, which will be, was the room hot enough or was it too cold? Did you like the food? Was the instructor good? Did they meet the objectives and that kind of thing? Those quick little happy sheets there don't really give us a lot of feedback. The difference that I want to make in the learning world is to identify those behaviors and really build systems to make them repeatable behaviors. It sounds like something out of a computer programming class, but it makes sense. If you want people to actually do something, you need to put systems in place for them to change their behavior, for them to build new habits, for them to get new routines, for them to build new neural pathways in their brains. And it's something that I think that it's always existed, but it's existed for the people who are like you, who are motivated learners, who are like, I'm going to do this, even if the training is bad. I am so motivated to get this credential over here that I'm going to put up with bad training just because I want that check mark. And I think that's a shame. It's a shame that it gets to that point. However, you're the kind of person who, if you wanted to learn about something brand new, you're going to put systems in place and you're going to change your behavior and probably build some new habits so you can focus on sometimes bad training and just put your head down and grind through it. I think the training needs to focus on behavior and not be about check marks.
Yeah. We are very closely aligned there. And I think the piece that really stands out for me is that if we're shifting behavior, we need to recognize, this is my opinion, of course, right? We can listen to this and then toss out anything that doesn't work for us. But if we're trying to shift behavior, especially inside of a business, then it's about shifting the ecosystem to line up with that behavior. And, you know, an example of this is if you want people to deliver on a particular metric, as an example, but in fact, the way you reward them has nothing to do with that metric. So if they don't get a bonus that's related to that metric, but yet you want them to deliver on it, you have to connect those two things. And it's part of the ecosystem of how behavior works, because behavior is about creating the expectation for something to occur, for someone to behave in a particular way. And then they behave that way, or they don't, or they get close, or maybe a little bit further away. And then we provide them, in the form of the organization, provides them with consequences or reinforcements or motivations to support or redirect, so that we can in fact like have a system that supports behavior. And I often think that when training programs are built and rolled out, you know, if we're talking about a university, the university does not care if we get a job. Like, they just don't care. Their job was to get the instruction out, and it is essentially like, here's your master's degree and go forth into the world. But they don't phone you every year to see how you're doing. They don't reward you for the jobs that you've gotten since then. They literally don't have an interest. But inside of a business, we do have an interest in people performing differently. And so I wonder how many people in the learning geek space, as we really talk about learning value, looking at those things and seeing at those things and seeing that ecosystem and working with other partners to create all of the structures, not just pieces of it through
training. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I spoke about it before that talked about how the training takes place and it didn't change the behavior. It's because there's something missing. Often people say, you know, we got this problem over here. We're going to put this training together. Okay, training is done, then the problem is solved. It's like, no, there has to be the behavior. It has to take place, and it has to, like you say, be measured. If it's not being measured, nobody's going to pay attention to it. But if you actually make a change, then put some behavioral measures in to see what's going on, you're going to get the results you want. And, you know, the conversation about rewards is another huge topic, because if somebody does some kind of a behavior change and then they get a reward, they get those little happy brain chemicals that they go shooting all over the place to encourage the behavior again. So you get rewarded for something. It's like, oh, that worked out really well. My brain says, do it again. Or it didn't go badly. My brain says, don't do that. So it's very basic. It's about that, having some kind of reward associated with the behavior change.
Yeah, and like, let's look at some of the giants out there today in terms of technology, like Facebook, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram coming up as kind of the larger ones that are front of mind for me. But one of the reasons that they're successful is that they've created, like, within their ecosystem, they reinforce the behaviors they want continuously. You get prompts and satisfaction out of clicking that button, right? You press the like button, there's a feeling of accomplishment. I don't know why, but I know that they've spent significant hours in creating an ecosystem that reinforces the behavior that they want to see. And so, you know, we also have that same ability as learning professionals to create and to be like very pinpointed about how we ensure that the training produces a change set of behavior, not in and of itself, but as part of an ecosystem.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. And, you know, you can put together a checklist for that. You can put together something so you can track it. And once you get that checklist done, you get the you get that little endorphin rush of, hurry, I've made a checklist. Let's keep going. Let's get some motivation. Let's get some momentum going.
Yeah, and a great resource for that is it's a Aubrey Daniels book, and I'm trying to remember the name of it off the top of my head. It's not coming to me.
Okay.
But Aubrey Daniels is, like, you know, the father of performance management, and he has that really simple equation. You know, it's antecedents, setting up the expectation, the behavior occurs, and then provide consequences, both positive and negative, to support the behaviors you want. But he talks about behavior as being the leading indicator about whether or not you're going to get the business results you want. Okay. And it's fascinating work, incredibly valuable, and absolutely worth the time for people that want to dig into behavioral change as part of their training repertoire. Like, I have tons of passion for this. I could literally go on for hours. Anywho, I'm going to dial it back. John.
Well, don't dial it back. Yeah, we can keep going on this. You know, the reason I want to is because I think one of the best books that I've ever read about behavior change is one called The Power of Habit by an author named Charles Duhigg. And I believe that he's actually a journalist who just does research into these things. But he basically says that the science is in on behavior change. It's about those chemicals in your brain. And he talks about how people didn't brush their teeth until somebody introduced a habit-forming loop, which is trigger behavior reward, trigger behavior reward, to get people to brush their teeth, to keep people to buy Febreze. There's all kinds of things that the habit system was used to get you to buy products. And it's really about changing people's behavior and changing your own behaviors. So I guess we'll have homework for the next one of these. We need to read the other books.
Yeah. Yeah, we might do a book study on this one, because I feel like behavior is the thing that we need to really wrap our heads around as learning professionals. And I mean, I spend a lot of time in that space, because oftentimes I'm not being asked to do like a training. I'm being asked to change a business, or being asked to change a business unit, or right. So I just love it when we can not be so narrow as to think that it's ever just a training and it's ever just about skills. What's the result you want?
Yep.
Because it's not just about the skill set. It's one of the behaviors that go along with it.
Absolutely. Yep. Good stuff. Yeah. I think that might be an entire other episode, or two or three. And, you know, you and I have known each other for years. We've never talked in this kind of depth about learning. We align on a lot of stuff.
I was surprised by it too. I was like, I mean, I knew I liked you, right? I was really clear. Obviously I wouldn't stay in contact with you otherwise, but it's just like, oh, this is really neat. There's a lot of synergy here. So yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. So far it's been the Mutual Admiration Society. We'll see what happens later when we disagree.
Yeah. There'll be some of that too, I'm sure. Give it time.
Yeah. It's just a matter of time.
I feel like there's a place that we could maybe influence for what we'd love to see from our peers in the learning space. And so when you think about the future of learning, all the changes that we've seen recently, and where you see us going, what do you think are those like top three things that learning professionals need to do differently?
I think one of the biggest things we need to do is shorten up our lessons. I did a 2-hour presentation yesterday over Zoom, and it was too long. It's too long because people are working from home and they're working remotely and they're connecting for these types of things. Attention spans are shrinking. There's always been that myth that a grown person, an adult's attention span is only about 20 minutes long. I've looked, I can't find the research. I'd be willing to bet it's even shorter than that. If you take a look at YouTube stats for people watching videos, if you get somebody watching over 2 minutes, that's an investment of their time. To watch a YouTube video for 2 whole minutes, that's crazy. So I know that we would love to be able to give them 6 hours of dedicated training on a grade 9 poetry assignment or something like that, just so they really understand it. But we need to realize that they're probably not going to read it. They're probably going to skim it at best. They're not going to really dive into it. They're not going to do a deep dive, just because it looks like it's so much content. So make things look like they're easy to digest. Use infographics, use images, use short text whenever possible. And there's lots of pluses for this too. If you get away from using the big text, it's easier for everybody to understand. It's easier to translate into other languages. The images can often be so much more descriptive than the text that you're going to get a better product at the end. You still need to do it, but that would probably be one of the biggest things I think people need to do is don't be so long-winded. And here I'm giving the long-winded answer, but don't be so long-winded when you're actually doing the training programs. It doesn't need to be an hour because you have an hour's of scheduled time. It can be 15 minutes and still have a lot of value.
Love it. Any other tips for the learning professionals that they need to do differently?
I think one of the other pieces is really focusing on video, because with the way the technology has blown up over the last 5 years, 10 years, and that type of thing, it's so easy to make videos now. You don't need to have a fully polished, super high level production video to add value to people. You don't need to spend thousands and thousands of dollars with a script and a crane shot and that type of thing. But you can actually have something that is a talking head that describes something of value that people will actually use. A perfect example is a couple of weeks ago, I had to change the air filter in the cabin of my truck. No idea how to do it. What did I do? Straight to YouTube. Oh, there's 19 videos about how to do it on a 2012 truck. Oh, there you go. That's how you do it. So you can actually put these learning pieces that almost become like destination learning pieces, as mm-hmm. opposed to you want to get this little piece of information about how to do this, you must read this entire manual first. Making it easier to digest, making it easier to get to, is going to make everybody happy. Those are my top two.
Okay. Does that mean I get to take your third one, or do you have another one?
I think you can have my third one. It sounds like you're jumping at the bit here. You got a couple more to talk about. I don't think we have a quota. You can have as much time as you want.
I love that you're so patient with me. It's fantastic. Okay. Yeah. So in the spirit of embrace the geek within us around learning, I really am in this conversation. I'm like so pumped up. All right. You know, I think what I've seen over the course of the decades in this space is a lot of lip service to the idea of not being an order taker in the learning and development space. And when I say lip service, it's kind of like, well, someone comes and they ask you, you know, we need a training to do X. And, oh, you need some self-awareness skills. Okay, well, why? Well, what are you hoping will be different in the business as a result of that? Well, you know, we're just trying to increase your self-awareness because there's been some challenges. Yeah, tell me about those challenges, right? So, you know, our role as we evolve, you know, unless we're just going to be pure instructional designers that are building content, mm-hmm. you know, and I see myself more as a learning advisor where I'm looking out at what is the change in the business. And in my toolkit, I have this thing that I can do called, you know, training and development and learning and development, or however you want to phrase it, whatever your word of the day is, don't care. But I have a tool in my toolkit. But in addition to that, part of the other tools in there, and I don't think my partners would like how I'm phrasing them right now. the access that I have to more specialties is my connection with the communications team and how we communicate about the changes that are expected, that the training will set the expectations around. It's my connections with the leadership team and how they sponsor this, what they say, how they show up, and our ability to engage with change professionals and their ability to influence for those right behaviors and provide those reinforcements and work with the sponsor and to actually be coordinated as a team to deliver business results and not localized training delivery. So it's just a tool. It's just one thing that we can do. But the other thing we can do is have these fantastic relationships with our partners in project management, in change management, in corporate communications, with our business disciplines, with, you know, senior leadership, and really be the people that can think with them and be thought partners with them to go, okay, so what are we really trying to achieve? And to overcome those barriers, I think, that are often in place inside of organizations that are like, they're just political nonsense.
Right? I'm always blown away by how training and learning departments seem to be a political swamp. I mean, sometimes it seems like it's for the learning, it's moved over here and moved over here, and it should report to here, and it doesn't report here. And it reports to the VP of IT, so all the training is IT focused, even though the rest of the company needs it and that kind of thing. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
your comment about order takers, though, I think that is absolutely a huge thing that needs to change. I've been in an experience where you have somebody who is leading a training project with no training experience, and all they want is order takers to build what they want. And it's like, this is going to go so terribly. How much you pay me? Yeah, I can't do it. How much? Well, maybe.
Yeah. And see, I just don't want to even be involved with those types of pieces of work anymore, because it's not satisfying for me. If you'll remember, like, our first comments, you know, you had that kind of connection to the learner experience. And, you know, I had a connection with the learner, but also to this idea of, like, concept to people. Like, how do we turn that into something they can do and apply, and it makes an improvement in their lives? And I'm the kind of facilitator that I've done sessions and training sessions around time management. I've had people come back after teaching that course and, like, in tears say you've given me my life back. So I know that I can make an applied difference in people's worlds. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want. I want to be involved with projects like that. Mm-hmm. And I want learning professionals that want to be involved in projects like that and don't settle for these half-baked answers of we need a training because we've got a problem inside of our team. Well, maybe we should talk about the problem inside of your team, because maybe that problem has to do with a leadership skill that's lacking or a performance conversation. And we need to have the bravery to continuously step into that space versus kind of being wallflowers and going, well, I'm just working in the L&D team.
Yeah, and it is bravery too. And to call out that kind of behavior, it takes some courage to actually just stand up and say, you know what, I don't want to build that because it's terrible. I know you think you want that, but you don't. It's not going to meet your needs. You don't even know what your needs are yet. How do you know if it's going to meet your needs?
Yeah, and I just straight out say now, it's like, well, so this won't solve the problem.
Yeah.
Just so as long as we all agree that we're doing this to make it look like it's solving the problem, but it will not solve the problem. So what I can tell you is that it will deliver a training that will require these many hours, and we will get great positive feedback from the experience, but it will not correct what you're seeking.
Yep, you're right. And, you know, I've worked in so many projects like that where they haven't actually taken the time to even look at the metrics. They don't have any metrics. And they've said, this is the training that's going to fix everything. It's like, have you even talked to the people that are causing the problems? Have you done the root cause analysis to figure out where things are going off the tracks? Because mm-hmm. until you fix that, it's not going to get fixed.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks for just having, I think I just had like a moment of inner cleansing. Just being able to say all of this out loud was so good for me. It was so good for me because this is all the stuff that is just rumbling around in my head as I work through projects and have done so for years. And it just kind of sits there. And yes, I can, you know, absolutely phone a friend and talk about it, but it's only with someone who's in the discipline.
Yes.
You can really get it, right? And I think that's part of why we wanted to have the Embrace the Geek first, is there's only so many people that are going to get this space. No matter how many times I hear, you know, how people outside of this space have become professionals in it with no real background at all, mm-hmm. right? I get it. And so I would love for this place to become a place where people can just embrace the inner geek around learning for themselves and just dive into these topics and get curious about it and look at the book recommendations and like just ask more questions and be just as opinionated as we are. Mm-hmm. Like be with us and be opinionated.
Yeah, absolutely. Polarize, have conversations, start poking those places where people aren't sure what they're doing and try and figure out what the heck is going on. And then you can actually build some training that will add value, add learning value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Change some systems, encourage absolutely. Some behaviors, and mm-hmm. start engineering our environments to actually work for the results that businesses say they want. That would be cool, right?
That would be cool. And that can manifest in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Sometimes it's not about training at all. Sometimes it's some other problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as learning professionals, I think we have the unique ability to be consummate connectors.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes.
Connecting people together to just truly have that collaborative discussion and stay open and stay curious. Like if there's anything that people could do differently starting right now, it's ask way more questions, mm-hmm. way more questions than what we're asking.
Yep. You know, I think learning can be a bridge into other departments, into other projects and that type of thing. Learning is something that across an organization, everybody should be engaged in some kind of learning all the time, or else you're dead. That's the only way it's going to be. So learning can be a way to sort of build bridges and tear down silos and get people to know what's going on. And one of the most interesting things is when you get into a big organization and get a bunch of learning people in a room talking about their projects, how much overlap there is, how much mm-hmm. redundancy there is, how much redundancy there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are such a nerd. Oh my gosh.
Yes, it can't be helped. It's one of those things.
I so love it. just it makes me think back to the like the initial days of meeting you, and I didn't ever imagine, John, that when I met you way back in the day at the same technology company that we'd find ourselves in this conversation. But I'm sure glad that we found time for this today.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been a lot of fun. I feel like we're kind of winding down. Do we have any more burning questions we want to talk about?
I have so many, but that's why there's going to be more podcasts. And so, you know, I think the invitation to the people listening is that there'll be more of us, and there'll be more of us with people that are going to join in the conversation. And we really are going to get some polarizing viewpoints, because we also want to talk to the leaders that don't like learning and development teams and don't find them useful and are frustrated. I want to hear from those people, and I want to talk to the people that love data, and I want to talk to the people that like love behavior change. Like, those are the people that get me curious. And so I'm looking forward to more of these. How about you, John?
Oh, absolutely. This is learning for us. I mean, first and foremost, we get to invite some neat guests of people that we know have good stories to tell and have learned a lot of things that they can share with us. I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes.
Awesome. Thank you, John. Have a great rest of your day, folks.
You too. That was it. That was our first podcast. Hope everybody enjoyed it, and hope you tune in for the next one. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.